If you've already travelled a fair amount in the Czech Republic, then Zlín is interesting precisely because of its uniqueness within the country. Walking around the city, you almost feel like you're not in Czechia anymore. Although you won't find many old castles or monasteries here, what you will find is a thriving, bustling industrial town with some interesting and unique gems of 20th century architecture. The industrial face of Zlín was largely sculpted by pioneering businessman Tomáš Bača, who built up his shoe empire in the first three decades or so of the 20th century. With its square red brick buildings, the city's former industrial zone, where Bača shoes used to be produced, smacks of an American manufacturing city like Detroit. And this is no coincidence. Tomáš Bača built the factory buildings according to plans that he brought back from America with him. However, as Lenka Čechmánková from the Museum of Southeastern Moravia in Zlín explains, most of the factory buildings nowadays are not the original ones from Tomáš Bača's time.
During the Second World War, Zlín was bombed in 1944. And during the bombing, a lot of the buildings here in the factory area were either completely destroyed or they were very badly damaged. So some of them had to be torn down, some of them were built, new buildings were built instead of the original ones. And these new buildings have they're a bit different than the original ones.
Indeed. Although Tomáš Bača can certainly take credit for shaping the city's look, some of Zlín's most iconic buildings, such as the red brick skyscraper in the former industrial district, were actually built after his death.
Right now we're in a building number 21 in Zlín, which nowadays serves as headquarters of the regional offices of Zlín region as well as financial offices of Zlín region. But originally this building was built to serve as headquarters of the Bača company. So in this building, that's where the head of the company was in 1930s when this building was built. It was Jan Antonín Bača.
Jan Antonín Bača took charge of the company after Tomáš Bača died in a plane crash in 1932. He was Tomáš's younger half-brother by 22 years. The two shared the same father, but had different mothers. Although called the skyscraper, nowadays the building probably wouldn't meet the criteria to be classified as such. Modern sources usually define skyscrapers as being at least 100 to 150 meters in height.
The building has 16 floors. We call it a skyscraper, even though nowadays it's not that impressive. It is 77 meters tall, so when we compare it to the skyscrapers of today, it's not that impressive. But at the time, it was the second tallest building in Europe.
The building was also very modern for its time, containing four elevators and a paternoster, a chain of cabins that goes around continuously in a loop, meaning you have to get on and off while the lift is still in motion. The skyscraper was built to accommodate the expanding needs of the Bača company. By 1935, the firm employed about 2,000 office workers, and it was decided that they should all be in one place.
Each floor in this building was designed as an open space office, and on each floor there were 200 people. There were some exceptions, for example, the 8th floor of the building, because that's where the offices of the directors were. So the 8th floor was divided into individual offices. The 16th floor is a rooftop, so that's where the rooftop garden is, where the fountain is, and nowadays there's also a coffee shop, which didn't used to be there originally.
However, by far the biggest attraction in this building is the office of Jan Antonín Bača himself. Lenka Čechmánková tells me that it is also an elevator as well as an office, which I assume must be a mistake or a mistranslation, until we step inside the office, where she presses a button and the whole room starts moving.
So, let's go up.
Wow, that's incredible. Oh my god. We're in an office room that's literally going up. Yeah, we're literally traveling upstairs in an entire office room. That's so cool.
So right now we're in an office of Jan Antonín Bača, which is also an elevator. The office measures 5 meters by 5 meters. It weighs 5 tons and it moves 70 centimeters per second.
Except for the control panel next to the desk and the number display above the door indicating what floor the room is currently on, it looks like an ordinary office. It has a desk, a chair and two telephones, one for domestic calls and one for international calls. It also has an air conditioning unit in the ceiling, and quite incredibly, there is a sink in the corner with running water, both hot and cold.
Running water, it was made possible by the fact that there was a water tank for fresh water above the elevator, and there was a water tank for the dirty, the wastewater below the elevator. And it all moved together, so that's why it was possible for there to be running water.
But the million-dollar question, of course, is why would Jan Antonín Bača have needed a moving office? Lenka Čechmánková says the story goes that he wanted to check up on his employees to see if they were really working, the idea being that he would stop on each floor, open the door and scan the room to check. But she insists this story can't be true.
There were 200 people on each floor. The idea that he would just open the door and see if all of those 200 people were working, that's just impossible. The floor was huge and there were so many people that that would not be possible. Also, there are numbers above the door of the elevator that indicate where the elevator is at the moment. And they are on each floor. So people would be able to say that he was at this floor, or the elevator was moving and it was coming to that floor, so they would already know that he was there even before he would be able to open the door.
The real reason for the moving office, she says, was efficiency.
Well, I think the idea was that it would be more effective. If he wanted to talk to someone, he could just go to the floor immediately. He didn't have to wait for somebody to go to his office. I think that was the idea.
The grand irony of the moving office is that Jan Antonín Bača never even got to use it. It was completed in December 1939. By that time, however, Bača had already left Czechoslovakia, fleeing the Nazi occupation, first to England, then the USA, and finally settling in Brazil. He never returned to Czechoslovakia, living in Brazil for the rest of his life, where he established a number of Bača towns, including Batapoira, Bataguasu, and Batatuba, all of which still exist to this day. Once we have reached the 16th floor of the building via Jan Antonín Bača's moving office, we emerge out onto the rooftop, from where the entire industrial zone can be viewed, including buildings number 14 and 15, which nowadays house a museum, art gallery and library, but used to be where the Bača company's shoe production took place. Incidentally, Lenka Čechmánková explains why the buildings all have numbers.
The system of numbering is inspired by America. The first number describes the position of the building in the factory area from east to west. And the other number describes the position of the building in the factory area from south to north. That means that this building number 21 is second from the east and first from the south in the factory area.
While most of Zlín's architecture, like the buildings in the former Bača industrial zone, is highly functionalist, not all of it is purely so. There are also examples of striking modernist architecture that has an aesthetic element to it. And there is no better example of this than a building on the edge of town, which Dagmar Vilupková shows me around. We are now in the Zygmunt Villa, which has been open to the public since autumn 2022, following the death in December 2021 of legendary Czech traveller Miroslav Zygmunt, who bought it in 1953 and lived in it for almost 70 years. Miroslav Zygmunt is known to the generation of Czechs who lived under communism as a great adventurer whose expeditions with his friend Jiří Hanzelka around far-flung corners of the globe helped bring the outside world a little closer to home for Czechs during the first two decades of the communist regime. The pair travelled through Africa, Latin America, Oceania and Asia on two separate trips, during which they carefully documented and recorded their journeys in order to later turn them into books, films and radio reports. Zygmunt and Hanzelka were not only friends, colleagues and travel partners, but also neighbours. Hanzelka's villa is just behind Zygmunt's villa and can be viewed from the garden. Zygmunt's villa itself is beautiful and striking, both inside and out. It was designed in 1933, but as Dagmar Vilupková, head of the Zygmunt Villa Endowment Fund, explains, there is a bit of a mystery surrounding the architect.
What is curious is that we don't know who precisely designed the villa. We think it was František Gahura, because at that time he was the Bača company architect, but the architectural drawings aren't signed, so we can't say with certainty.
The interior was redesigned by architect Zdeněk Plesník in the 1950s, after Zygmunt bought the villa. Dagmar Vilupková again.
The villa is unique in that it is completely authentic. Miroslav Zygmunt lived here for 70 years, and the interior and furniture have been kept exactly as he designed it and left it after his death. He entertained many well-known guests here, for example Václav Havel, and I think each person that visited left a distinct mark here. The place has a special atmosphere.
After Zygmunt's death, the Zygmunt Villa Endowment Fund endeavoured to keep the villa exactly as he had left it, giving it a still lived-in feel. The rooms are filled with tokens and souvenirs from his travels.
Jak vidíte, tak se nacházíme v prostoru, který opravdu je zařízen k běžnému životu.
As you can see, we are in a space that is furnished for everyday life. We left everything so that visitors could view it as it was when Mr. Zikmund lived here. Jaromír Hanzlík, a Czech actor, came to visit and he asked as a joke when Mr. Zikmund was coming back from town, because the villa really looks as if he had just popped out somewhere and will be back at any moment.
Kdyby odešel někam na návštěvu a měl se každou chvíli vrátit.
The place is also filled with a vast library of books in several languages. As Dagmar Vilupkova explains, Hanzelka and Zikmund would prepare extensively for their trips beforehand, studying maps and learning the languages of the places they were going.
Pan Zikmund mluvil, myslím si, 7 jazyky.
Mr. Zikmund spoke 7 languages. I heard, I don't know if it's true or not, that he and Mr. Hanzelka would divide the languages they needed to learn between them before they embarked on a trip. So they spoke the usual European languages, English, German, French, Spanish, Russian, but they also learned less common non-European languages.
Takové ty neúplně běžné jazyky.
Dagmar Vilupkova says that Mr. Zikmund's logistical skills can be seen even in the way he designed the villa.
Jo, ale vidět právě i tady toto dokládá, jak se důkladně připravovali na ty cesty.
You can see how carefully and thoroughly he prepared for his trips. Mr. Zikmund was very good at planning and organizing, and you can see that even in the villa itself. The house is a model of sustainability. If you look around, you could still live in it today. The design, the functionality, it's built to last.
Dá bydlet a opravdu ten design a ta funkčnost přetrvává.
The villa is available for pre-booked tours on designated days, but not only that. As Miroslav Zikmund himself intended, the Zikmund Villa Endowment Fund has also kept it open as a meeting place for cultural events.
Protože pan Zikmund chtěl, aby se z vily nestalo muzeum, jako klasické takové mrtvé.
Mr. Zikmund didn't want the villa to turn into a museum in the classic sense after his death. He wanted cultural life to continue here, for people to gather and have discussions here, artists, philosophers, historians. So we try to have in-person gatherings where we invite well-known people from the Zlín region or even from the wider Czech Republic to hold lectures and discussions here, which are open to the public, so local people from Zlín can come.
I vlastně, i kdyby Zlíňákům, kteří mají možnost právě na tyto besedy přijít.
Zikmund's villa, as well as providing another example of Zlín's interesting modern architecture, also highlights 2 further notable points about Zlín. First of all, as well as being a centre of industry, it also has a rich cultural life. And secondly, it was the birthplace of, or home to, a number of prominent Czech personalities. In addition to the Bača family and Hanzelka and Zikmund, the Olympic medal-winning long-distance runner Emil Zátopek also called it home for a while, and it is the birthplace of former US President Donald Trump's first wife, Ivana Trump, née Zelníčková. Although the city of Zlín is characterized by its 20th century architecture, it would be misleading to suggest that this is the only kind of architecture you can find anywhere in the Zlín region. Outside of the city itself, there are plenty of examples of older architectural styles, such as the Romanesque Basilica of the Assumption of the Virgin Mary and Saints Cyril and Methodius in Velehrad, an important Catholic pilgrimage site, and the Baroque Gardens and Castle in Kroměříž, a UNESCO World Heritage Site. The castle was the representative seat of bishops and archbishops of Olomouc for more than 3 centuries. These men bore the title of Prince of Moravia until 1918, when the use of noble titles in the Czech lands was abolished with the establishment of the First Republic. They often hosted distinguished guests at the castle, such as Russian Tsar Alexander III or Austrian Emperor Franz Joseph I and his wife Sisi, who are all pictured in portraits hanging in one of the chateau's rooms, called the Tsar's Room. Teresa Dufkova, head of guided tours at the Archbishop's Chateau, as the Kroměříž Castle is officially known, explains how this room received its name.
This room has been given to a Russian Tsar Alexander III when he came to visit, or when he came to have a meeting with Austrian Emperor Franz Joseph I. For Kroměříž, it was a big event. It was just like the Czech president would meet in Kroměříž with the president of American states. It was 25th and 26th of August 1885 when he met here with the Austrian Emperor Franz Joseph I and his wife Empress Elizabeth called Sisi. There is a lot of books about this meeting. We know what they were wearing when they arrived, what they were eating, but nobody knows what they were talking about here.
Nowadays, the chateau doesn't receive many royal visitors, but it does receive another kind of distinguished guest, film crews and movie stars. Several well-known films and TV series have been shot here, particularly in what is undoubtedly the most beautiful room in the castle, the Assembly Hall, which Dufková describes as the jewel of this chateau.
We've had a Netflix in here about a month ago. They were making a movie. Empress Elizabeth, the second part. Also, the Czech TV was making a movie in here. Often I ask visitors if they've seen a movie of Amadeus, which was made by Czech director Forman 40 years ago, because it was made in this assembly hall. Yeah, maybe a quarter of the movie was made in here.
Wow. The assembly hall also serves other cultural purposes, for example, concerts. Teresa Dufková says that for the past month, benefit concerts have been held in this room every Tuesday. And you can see, or rather hear, why. The acoustics are amazing.
I also often ask people they can sing here. I give them an opportunity to sing us a song.
Because the acoustics are good?
Yes, yeah. Because of the acoustic is so good.
When I ask her if she ever sings in the room, at first she says she only does it when she's alone. But with a bit of coaxing, I managed to convince her to give us a song. I had never been to the Zlín region before this trip and didn't know what to expect from a place that is mostly famed for its industrial history. But I have to admit, I was more than pleasantly surprised. I was impressed, and not just by Teresa's singing. This less than typical Czech city and the surrounding region offers the seasoned traveller a refreshingly unique cultural, historical and architectural experience, unlike any I've had anywhere else in Czechia.